Second technique. This consciousness exists as each being and nothing else exists. Scientists used to say in the past that only matter exists and nothing else exists. Great systems of philosophy arose based on this concept that only matter exists. But even those who believed that matter exists, they had to concede that something like consciousness is there. Then what it is? So they said that consciousness is just an epiphenomena, just a byproduct of matter. It is nothing but matter in disguise. Something very subtle but still material. But this half century has seen a very great miracle happen. Scientists tried and tried to find out what matter is, and the more they tried, the more they came to realize that there is nothing like matter. The matter was analyzed and found that it has disappeared. Nietzsche said just 100 years before that God is dead. And with God dead, there can be no consciousness, because God means the totality of consciousness. But just within 100 years' time, matter is dead. And now matter is dead not because religious people believe so. Now matter is dead because scientists have come to a definite conclusion that matter is just appearance. It appears because we cannot see very deeply. If we can see deeply, it disappears. And then energy is left. This phenomenon of energy, non-material energy, force, has been known by mystics since long. In the Vedas, in the Bible, in Quran, in Upanishads, all over the world, mystics have penetrated into existence, and they have concluded always that matter is just an appearance. Deep down, there is no matter, but energy. With this, now science agrees. But the mystics have said one thing more, and science has yet to agree with it. And science will have to agree with it. Those mystics have come to another conclusion also. They say when you penetrate deep in energy, energy also disappears and only consciousness remains. So these are three layers. Matter, the first layer, the surface. If you penetrate the surface, then the second layer becomes apparent. You can perceive the second layer, which is energy. And if you penetrate energy, then the third layer becomes illumined, and the third layer is consciousness. In the beginning, science said they are just dreaming, because we see only matter and nothing else. Then science tried to penetrate, and mystics' second layer was affirmed, that matter is just apparent, deep down it is nothing but energy. Now mystics have another claim also. They say penetrate more into energy and energy also disappears and there remains only consciousness. That consciousness is God. That is the deepest, most core. If you penetrate in your body, these three layers are there. Just on the surface is your body. Body looks material. But deep in body there are currents of life, prana, vital energy. Without that vital energy, your body will just be a corpse. It is alive with something flowing in it. That flowing something is energy. But deep is still deep. You are aware. You can witness your body, your vital energy, you can witness both. That witnessing is your consciousness. Every existence has three layers. The deepest is the witnessing consciousness. Just in the middle is vital energy. And just on the surface is matter, material body. This technique says this consciousness exists as each being and nothing else exists. What you are, who you are, if you close your eyes and try to find out who you are, ultimately you are bound to come to a conclusion that you are consciousness. Because everything else may belong to you, but you are not that. The body belongs to you, but you can be aware of the body. And that which is aware of the body becomes separate. The body becomes the object of knowledge, and you become the subject. You can know your body. Not only you can know, you can manipulate your body. You can activate your body, or you can make inactive. You are separate. You can do something with your body. Not only that, you are not body, you are not your mind. Because you can become aware of your mind also. Thoughts move, you can see them. You can do something with your thoughts also. You can make them disappear completely. You can become thoughtless. Or you can concentrate your consciousness on one thought. And you may not allow it to move from there. You can focus yourself on it and it will have to remain there. Or you can allow a river-like flow of thought. You can do something with your thoughts. Even you can dissolve them completely and there is no thought. But you are. You will know that there are no thoughts. A vacuum has come into being. But you will be there witnessing that vacuum. Only one thing you cannot separate yourself with is your witnessing energy. That means you are that. You cannot separate yourself from it. You can separate with everything. You can know you are not your body, you are not your mind. But you cannot know that you are not your witnessing. Because whatsoever you do, you will be the witness. You cannot separate yourself from witnessing. That witnessing is consciousness. And unless you come to a point from where separation becomes impossible, you have not come to yourself. So there are methods in which the seeker goes on eliminating. He goes on eliminating first the body, then the mind, and then comes to the point where nothing can be eliminated. In Upanishads they say neti neti. This is a deep method. This is not. That is not. So the seeker goes on knowing this is not, this is not me, this is not I, goes on and on. Ultimately he comes to a point where he cannot say this is not I. Just a witnessing self remains. Pure consciousness remains. This pure consciousness exists as each being. Whatsoever is in existence is just a phenomena of this consciousness, just a wave, a crystallization of this consciousness, and nothing else exists. But this has to be felt. Analysis can be helpful, intellectual understanding can be helpful, but this has to be felt that nothing else exists, only consciousness exists, and behave as if only consciousness exists. I have heard about Lynch, one Zen master. He was sitting one day in his hut. Someone came to meet him. The man who came was angry. He may have been fighting with his wife or with his wife or something, but he was angry. He pushed the door in anger. He threw his shoes in anger. And then he came very respectfully, bowed down to Lynchy. Lynchy said, "First go and ask forgiveness from the door and ask forgiveness from the shoes." That man must have looked at Lynchy very strangely. There were other people also sitting. They started laughing. Lynchy said, "Stop and ask that man, if you don't go, then leave. I have nothing to do with you." That man said, "It will look crazy asking forgiveness from the shoes and from the door." Lynchy said, "It was not crazy when you expressed anger. Now it will be crazy. But everything has consciousness. So you go, and unless the door forgives you, I'm not going to allow you in." That man felt awkward, but he had to go. That man later on became a monk himself, became enlightened. When he became enlightened, then he related the whole anecdote. And he said, "When I stood before the door asking forgiveness, I felt awkward, foolish. But then I said, if Lynchy says, there must be something in it. I trusted Lynchy. So I said, let it be foolish, but if he says, there must be something in it." In the beginning, whatever I was saying to the door was just superficial, artificial. But by and by, I started becoming warm. And Lynchy was waiting, and he had said that, "I will watch. If the door forgives you, only then you will come in. Otherwise you go on being there and try and persuade the door and the shoes, unless they forgive." And this man said, "I became by and by warm. I forgot about that many people were looking. I forgot about Lynchy. And then the concern became sincere and real. And I started to feel that the door is changing. And the shoes are changing their mood. And the moment I realized that the door has changed and the shoes have changed and they are feeling happy, immediately Lynchy said, now you can come. You have been forgiven." This incident became a transforming phenomenon in his life, in that man's life. Because for the first time he became aware that everything is really a crystallization of consciousness. If you cannot see it, it is because you are blind. If you cannot hear it, it is because you are deaf. There is nothing the matter with the things around you. Everything is condensed consciousness. The problem is with you, because you are not open, not sensitive. This technique says this consciousness exists as each being and nothing else exists. Live with this notion. Be sensitive to this. And wherever you move, move with this mind and this heart, that everything is consciousness and nothing else exists. Sooner or later, the world changes its face. Sooner or later, objects disappear and persons start appearing everywhere. Sooner or later, suddenly, the whole world is illumined, and you know that you were living in a world of dead things just because of your insensitivity. Otherwise, everything is alive. Not only alive, everything is conscious. Because everything deep down is nothing but consciousness. But you can leave it as a theory. You can believe in it as a theory, then nothing will happen. You will have to make it a way of life, a style of life, behaving as if everything is conscious. In the beginning it will be an as if, and you will feel foolish. But if you can persist in your foolishness, and if you can dare to be foolish, soon the world starts revealing its mysteries. And science is not the only methodology to enter the mysteries of existence. Really, that is the crudest methodology. It's lowest. A mystic can enter into existence in a single moment. Science will take millions of years to penetrate that much. Upanishads say the world is illusory, the matter is illusory. After 5,000 years, science could say that matter is illusory. Upanishads say that deep energy is conscious. Science will still take 5,000 years more. Mysticism is a jump. Science is a very slow movement. The intellect cannot jump. It has to argue every fact, prove, disprove, experiment, but the heart can jump immediately. Remember, for the intellect the process is necessary, then comes the conclusion. Process first, then the conclusion. Logical. For the heart, conclusion first, then comes the process. It is just the reverse. That's why mystics cannot prove anything. They have the conclusion, but they don't have the process. You may not be aware, you may not have noticed it, that mystics simply talk about conclusions. If you read Upanishads, then you will find only conclusions. When for the first time they were translated into Western languages, Western philosophers couldn't see the point because there was no argument. Upanishads say there is Brahma. Without any argument, how you reach to this conclusion? What is the proof? On what premise you declare there is Brahma? They don't talk anything. They simply come to the conclusion. The heart reaches to the conclusion immediately. And then, when the conclusion is reached, you can create the process. That is the meaning of theology. Mystics reach the conclusion and theologians create the process. So Jesus reaches the conclusion and then theologians, St. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas, they will go on creating the process. That is secondary. The conclusion has been reached. Now you have to find out proofs. The proof is in the life of the mystic. He cannot argue about it. He himself is the proof if you can see. If you cannot see, then there is no proof. Then religion is absurd. Don't make these techniques theories. They are not. They are jumps into experience, jumps into conclusions.